So, tonight's the Lucifer Rebels Against God. That's the title of the lesson. But before we get there, did anybody do any thinking about last week and our lesson? Any questions or comments from that? What? Well, first let me ask. What?
I think I always leave here with things going in my head, but last week I think was good. I think all the public, the open discussion was good. You know, I think we all learned a lot with the, you know, the different word for helper and, you know, what, how that can mean. I think I learned a lot and it opened my eyes to, like, how the beginning of the book was a lot more.
Yeah, that just shows you're never too old to learn.
It's not cut and dry. It's not as, like, from what I remember as a kid, there's a lot more to it that I don't think was, I guess, I'm sure it wasn't taught because it was, you know, as kids, you can't comprehend it as well, but
right
now, I can see there's, I mean, there was a lot to that beginning.
And that,
just that one section.
What was God instituting when he created Eve for Adam?
As a helper.
A helper, yep.
A partner, someone that he could lean on and she could guide him.
Help, somebody to help, okay.
I remember it was revealer. Revealer of the enemy.
Right, okay.
And also a conscience.
A conscience? Conscience? Well, my question would be, why God created Eve, because God said it wasn't good for man to be alone, right? He recognized that, and he was naming all the animals. And Adam was like, oh, notice there was no one for him, and God said, well, he needs a helper. And then after that, I don't know that there was an official wedding ceremony that took place, that God, you know, had a, you know, maybe all the angels together gathered, I don't know. When you think about those types of things, and when you think about marriage, that was the first wedding, first marriage. First marriage there was Adam and Eve. And so we must recognize that marriage is between a man and a woman as something that God instituted from the very beginning. In this lesson here that we're going to talk about, we're not going to really talk much about any of these, the things that took place there. We're going to be covering the whole aspect of Lucifer or Satan or devil, whatever word you want to use there, is used different times throughout the Bible. But we're going to be looking, we're not even really going to be looking much in Genesis at all. We're actually going to be turning to Isaiah and Ezekiel. So it'll be Isaiah 14, and then Ezekiel 28 is where we're going to be spending most of our time today in this lesson. We've already talked about angels, how that they were already at the beginning of creation. They were there when God created the world. They rejoiced. They were watching. We know that they are spirit beings. What are some other characteristics of angels that we've learned about already that have taken place? We've kind of talked about what angels are. Are they spirit beings? God created them. What else?
Can only be in one place at a time.
Only one place at a time. Why did God create angels? What he wants them to do. So he created them to be his messengers, his helper. I mean, to direct them to do whatever they need to be done. Would you say angels are wise?
Yeah, they're
very wise.
As wise as God has allowed them to be.
Yeah. How about powerful?
To an extent,
right?
I was going to say, in respects to us, yes. In respects to God,
No. The power is not going to be something that they're going to be about. So we know that why God created angels. We know that they were created for a special purpose. They were created also to worship him. And so Lucifer was just like all these other angels, except he was put to the highest position. We're going to get to that in a moment. He was put over all the other angels. But all the angels were created perfect, just like Adam and Eve were. Okay, so they were perfect in every way. Angels don't have a body like we do. They're spirit bearing. Although they can come in a form of a body. We'll see that later on through as we go through here. They have form, though. We'll see here what some of these forms are about it, but some of them will have wings. So you have this picture, you have this thing. They also have a will. They have free will. They can choose, just like we can. Let's read the first verse that we want to read is Ezekiel 28:15. And this is talking about Lucifer here.
15?
Yeah, verse 15.
You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created till wickedness was found in you.
Okay, so you were perfect or you were blameless. Some translations will put the word perfect in there. You were perfect in all your ways from the very day you were created. Ezekiel 28:14, the verse before that, someone want to read that one? This tells us about Lucifer's position.
You are the anointed cherub who covers, and I place you there. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked in the midst of the stones and fire.
Okay. He was given one of great authority or power over all the other angels. In other words, he was the anointed cherub. He was over all other angels. And he was his closest position. In other words, if you look at it like today, he might be considered the vice president of the United States. In other words, second in command, only to God himself. So basically, there was God, and then he had Lucifer, put him in this position, and he was given charge of all the angels. Now, the word cherub there is a high, how do you want to put it, another word for angel, but it's the anointed one would be someone that would be above something else. When you think of when it says here, my translation will give you, I ordained and anointed you as the mighty angelic guardian. And then another translation would say, or cherub, in place of that. You had access to the holy mountain of God and you walked among the stones of fire. What kind of picture goes through your mind when you hear that? I mean, when you think of heaven,
red hot stones.
Yeah, but when you think of heaven, do you ever picture that being in heaven?
No,
I don't either. But there's obviously something there in heaven where there's stones that are on fire or really hot, like hot coals.
It's like on the bottom of the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just some things there. To point out about Lucifer. However, Lucifer, he became very prideful. He began to rebel against God. And he chose to rebel. Let's read 13, Ezekiel 28:13 through 15 again. We'll start off with 13 this time.
You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone adored you. Carnelian, crystallite, and emerald, topaz, onyx, and jasper, lapis, lazuli, turquoise, and beryl. Your settings and mountings were made of gold. On the day you were created, they were prepared. You were anointed as a guardian cherub, for so I ordained you. You were on the holy mount of God. You walked among the fiery stones. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created till wickedness was found in you.
All right, think about this. I don't know about you, but I've always never pictured Lucifer or Satan as what's described here. Before I read this passage, I've always pictured as dark. I mean, whenever you watch a movie, if Satan's there in the background, it's, you know, it's dark. It's maybe in a hooded thing. You can't see his face. You know, this very...
It's because he's rarely depicted before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Mm-hmm. What he was before.
Yeah. So think about it in this context here. That picture, or what we would picture Satan as today, or maybe, is not what he actually looks like. Maybe now that's what it looks like. I don't know. But the picture we get here is of this beautiful creation. He's wearing all kinds of jewels. I mean, some of these things here I've never even heard of before. matter of fact, whenever I go to the mall or something, and if I'm walking through a jewelry store, walking by, I always look to see, are there any type of jewels there that are listed in the Bible? You know, because some of these things are so rare,
right,
that, you know, it's not just to everyday. Maybe a very wealthy person would have something like this, but, you know, I've never seen a carnelian. Anybody ever see a carnelian?
No.
Not even heard of that. It's obviously red. It says a red carnelian, whatever that means. Beryl. I've never seen beryl either, but it talks about that being blue-green. Turquoise and emerald, yeah, I've seen those. I've seen crystal. You know, so you have these things here. And so here, notice where he's at. Notice where Lucifer is at, where he was also at. He worked in the garden. He was in the garden. It says, you were in the Garden of Eden, the garden of God. And then he says, and there your clothing was adorned with every precious stone. And so you have this picture of Lucifer, and I think it's very important. Lucifer, his mission, his goal when he rebels against God, becomes this deceiver of people. He will deceive people. It's very, very sly, tricky. We'll get this picture here in a minute here. But you have this picture of Lucifer. He's perfect. He's the anointed cherub. He walks on among the mountain of God on the fiery stones, and he was blameless, or he was perfect again from the day of his creation, until evil was found in you. Now, when you think of until evil was found in you, verse 17 says this. It gives us a picture of what created evil, or what caused Lucifer to fall. And it says this, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. This is what caused Lucifer to fall. He became very prideful of his beauty. Obviously, there was none of the other angels look like him. I mean, he was totally different than any other angel that was out there. And so it says that your heart was lifted up. What does this tell us about God when you read that verse?
It tells me that God gives us the free will to make choices.
Okay.
We make either good choices or bad choices.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Hit free choice.
It tells me that God made Lucifer different.
Okay.
Contributed to his pridefulness, probably.
Could be.
He was different, maybe?
Uh-huh. Yeah? Lucifer had the choice. He could choose whether or not to serve God and or not. Now, if someone came to you and gave you that list of jewels, those jewelry, pieces of jewels, Ashley, if John came and gave you all those jewels, would you just want to just give your whole heart to John? You would. So, now, I don't know about me if someone gave me a bunch of jewelry, pieces of jewelry, but what happens oftentimes today, it's not traditional. I mean, it's not necessarily have to be done this way, but what happens oftentimes when a guy goes to propose to a lady?
He gives her a diamond.
Gives her a diamond. What happens? Just the heart just melts, and, you know, and there's this, yes. Not always the case. Don't get me wrong. It's not always the case. But when you think about that, it's here he is. God clothed him in these jewels, and it went to his head, if you might say. You know, it becomes this, I am this, and it's pride. And so here we have Lucifer, again, because of his free choice that God gave him, he then chose, and he says, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. Notice what sin does to us. Notice what sin did to Lucifer. It's the same thing that sin does to Lucifer, it will do to us. Sin corrupts your wisdom. I mean, it's very, very plain right there. And it was for the sake of his splendor. Oftentimes, when we give in to sin, our wisdom is corrupted, and it's used as a result of something. Our pride gets in the way. You can always pretty much tie any sin back to the root cause of pride. It's just the way it is. And here it is, and it's because of what takes place here. Let's look at what else. Let's flip over to Isaiah 14 and verses 12 through 5, and we're going to see what Satan, or Lucifer, wanted to do. And there are four things that Satan said. Now let's read these. Isaiah 14, 12 through 14, 12 through 15.
I will ascend above the tops of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. But you are brought down to the realm of the dead, to the depths of the pit.
Okay, so we have Lucifer saying, I will ascend into the place of God, or in God's place. In other words, I will go and be in God's presence, or be in his place, sit on his throne. I will exalt myself to the position of God's authority. In other words, over God. Okay? I will also sit on God's throne. I will sit there. And I will be like the Most High. Again, at the very root of all sin is pride. And here's Satan, or Lucifer, saying these things. This is what he said. Lucifer was the first one to do evil. Oftentimes we say, well, it was man who sinned. Well, yes, man sinned. But it is Lucifer who committed the first evil. Lucifer decided to go his own way instead of God's way. Lucifer chose to be independent of God. He planned to take over God's position. Then God's plan for the angels was that they would obey him, right? He created them. He should be able, any created being or anything that he created, God has power over, right?
Right.
So he basically can say, this is what you do. Gave him a free choice. Lucifer stepped outside of God's purpose and opposed him, becoming the very first being to sin. Okay? However, that just didn't affect Lucifer. Other angels saw this and decided to follow. And that's where we get this. I'll go back to the slide back here. I'll scan back real quick to this picture here. God's angels. Then you have Lucifer, Satan, and then you have his demons. The demons are basically other angels who decided to follow Satan, Lucifer, when he left heaven. So you have this. You have this thing. Matthew 25:41 says that Lucifer and the angels who followed him, or refers to the angels that followed him, the devil and his angels. So in other words, you see the changing of the word devil and his angels.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's what. That's what. When you go through, you'll see that. God knew that Lucifer would become prideful and wanted to take the place of his creator. How would God know that?
God knows everything.
Well, why?
Because he's almighty.
Okay. God created him, right.
Created him with that in mind.
Yes. So God knew what Lucifer was thinking and planning because he created him. Just like he created us, he knows us. Which means that because God knew that Lucifer's thoughts and all the other angels that were rebellious in there, God can see into their heart, or in essence, if you want to say their heart, as a spirit being, they can see into their mind, will, and emotions. Okay, nothing can be hidden from God. Nothing. Isaiah 13 or 14 says this: "You said to yourself." In other words, this is God talking to Isaiah, telling him. This is what Isaiah is understanding from the Lord, that, hey, Satan said to himself, or Lucifer said to himself, "I will." Well, only God could know that. Can you see my heart right now? Know what I'm thinking?
Yeah.
You can hear me talking, but I could be thinking about two different things and talking at the same time. And couldn't that be possible?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ever sit there and try to be quiet and meditate on the passage of Scripture, and you're reading, and all of a sudden your mind wanders?
Yeah.
Oh, I got this whole pile of work over here to do, or I got this to do.
To
yes. And so nobody else can hear that. Nobody else can see that. They may just see you sitting there reading a book, but your mind is over here in la-la land or whatever. Okay? And so when your mind is wandering, nobody can see that except God. So here we have Lucifer. We have that. Isaiah... let's go. Let me see here. Hebrews 14:13. I'm going to flip over there real quick. This is a verse. I didn't tell anybody to grab that one. So I'll just flip right over there real quick. Hebrews 14:13 says this. First 4:13. What am I saying? Woo! Chapter 4, verse 13. My goodness. Nothing in all of creation is hidden from God. Everything is naked and exposed before his eyes. And he is the one to whom we are accountable. So, well, let me ask this question. It's one of the questions in the book here. Sometimes I ask these questions and I'll ask them from the book, and there's other ones that I have myself. So, what do you think God's response was to Lucifer's ambition to be like him?
Repeat that again.
What do you think God's response was to Lucifer's ambition to be like him?
I can't imagine God was happy there. A lot of disappointment.
Well, wait a minute now. Yeah, he might have been disappointed. But let me put it this way. Growing up, you might have had friends, and if you're older than some of your friends that you hung out around with, some of those friends look up to you. And even today, you might have coworkers or family members who look up to you. They admire you. They are like, wow, I want to be like Joanne. I want to be like Joanne someday. When I get to be Joanne's age, I want to be like Joanne. I want to be able to, you know, whatever. Anybody had that? You know, some kid come up to you and say, "Man, I want to be like you," or "I want to work at your place,"
mm-hmm.
Because they respect you, they
right.
admire that. is that a, that's not a bad thing, right?
No.
So here he is. I mean, maybe ambition is the wrong word. Ambition and admire are two different things. So I might be having a play on words there. But ambition means when we look at people today and see someone who's very ambitious, you're like, wow, they're a go-getter. Yeah, they're someone you want on your team. You want, hey, they're just after it. I mean, you don't have to tell them anything, just get her done. This is a little different type of ambition. Lucifer basically wanted God's job.
He wanted, in other words, God.
Right. I have no problem if one of my employees wants my job. I flat out told when I transferred from the stove shop to the grocery side beforehand, we brought on a fella, and I took him out to train him on service. And when I went out there, we were riding in the truck one day, and I said, hey, it's your job to work me out of a position. That's what I told him. He looked at me like, what are you talking about? I said, no, don't be afraid to put me out of a job. That's your job. And he said, well, that's kind of backwards, you know. I said, no, because it's not your responsibility to make sure that our supervisor has another position for me. It's your job is to continue to push me out and let me do something else. That's why we brought you on board. You imagine God telling that to Lucifer.
No.
All right, Lucifer, it's your job to put me out of a job.
No.
That is not going to happen, right?
No,
no, it's not going to happen. But Lucifer, in essence, that's what he was trying to do. I will ascend. I will do these things. A little different than what the example I gave you. But trying to give you a picture here, a mental picture of what it could have been like for Lucifer. But he got to the point where he got so prideful that he ended up rebelling against God, and you have these other angels following him. God removed Lucifer and his angels from their position as God's servants. We see what happened here when you go back to verse 15 of Isaiah 14. It says this. Instead, you will be brought down to the place of the dead, down to the lowest depths. In other words, if you were the owner or you were the president of the United States and somebody tried to be very ambitious and tried to come in and take over, or even your home, somebody was trying to get into your home and destroy it and take things, you're going to take certain measures. Let's say your house is broken into. Police come out, do their thing, and you feel like, wow. Anybody have anything that's stolen from them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And did you put any precautions after that?
Yeah. Well,
our neighbor has a camera,
mm-hmm.
of course, and, well, like, of course, we didn't have any, nobody ever broke into our house, so we just locked the doors from now east and locked them out.
Right.
Not locked the doors. So
yeah,
like,
that's what happened to me.
Started
doing,
yeah.
And, I mean, he was, because we live set back and off from the neighborhood, so it's just not a convenient or
mm-hmm.
Enticing place to go, but pretty much we started locking the doors.
And yeah.
The guy across the street's got cameras, so I guess that's kind of a deterrent
mm-hmm.
in a way. But,
yeah.
Just more vigilant.
Yeah, you become more, yep, exactly. You begin to put up these defenses. Defenses lock the door. And if you're in a very public area or something like that, you might put up cameras. Today at work, I had a couple young fellas in the line, and they called me over and said, hey, these other two guys over here, this other fellow put two fidget spinners in his pocket. So I went up and I approached the guy and said, do you have any fidget spinners in your pocket? Nope, don't have any. I said, do you mind to see what's in your pocket? Pulls out cell phone out of his pockets. Didn't think to check his back pockets. He just pulled them out of the front pockets. Nothing. I'm like, okay. They're in line waiting, and so I went up. What do you think I did? I went to the video camera. The fidget spinners are right up by the register. So I went up to the video camera, and sure enough, saw this young fella take two fidget spinners off, and he walks out of the view of the camera. I'm like, doggone it, I can't see it. Goes around the store. I see him come back. He doesn't have the fidget spinners in his hand anymore. I'm like, So they were outside in the parking lot. Walked out to the parking lot. Said, I need to talk to you. It's raining outside. I said, could you tell me in the store where you put the fidget spinners? I said, I have you on video taking two fidget spinners off of the rack. You carry them and you go into the middle of the store somewhere where there's no camera and I can't see. Can you tell me where you put them? Oh, I put them on the shelf somewhere. So I need you to come back inside and show me where you put them. I can't do that. We're getting ready to leave. I said, no, you're going to come back inside and show me where the fidget spinners are at. In other words, eventually he pulls them out of his pocket, gives them back to me. But the other thing with the whole thing with that was I went in bed vigilant. I was trying to protect. It's my job to protect. Anybody who you put up a strong defense when somebody tries to come in and take something away. That's what God was doing. No, you're not going to be, well, one, because God's perfect. He can't be in the presence of evil and sin. In other words, you can't have that in his presence. He's perfect. He's a holy God. The second thing is you're not going to sit in my city, quote unquote, or my country and try to continue to disrupt my country. You're getting out. So he kicks him out, right? He says, I'm going to put you. Where does he say he's going to put him? So where did he get thrown down first, though?
To the earth.
Right. Verse 12 says, you've been thrown down on the earth, and you who destroyed the nations of the world. In other words, he is giving us a picture of what Satan's job or his role is now. Satan's role and his job is not to just meander around the earth. No, his role is going to be to destroy the nations of the world. That's his target. It's us, all the nations. Not just one nation, it's all the nations. And then it says, you will be brought down. He tells them where he's going to end up going. He's basically telling them, you're going to go down to the lowest depths, eventually to the place of the dead. Okay? So we have this thing. Number one, Lucifer was created being, and he had no right to challenge God. He was not wiser or stronger than God, which we noticed because God kicked him out. God is the only true and eternal God. There is no, Satan can't usurp his, he can't go in and says, he says I will do these things, but he can't. God is the author of life, so he can't overcome that. So God removes Lucifer and all the other rebellious angels from their positions as his servants, which he was created them to be. I would wonder what that looked like when that took place. Because it says, I saw, how did it word it? He said, how you are fallen from heaven. Alta, you read that. Can you read that verse again? Because mine gives me a little bit different picture.
How you have fallen from heaven, morning star, son of the dawn.
Okay. So, how have you fallen from heaven? And later on in the New Testament, there is a verse that says, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. In other words, you get this picture, the picture of lightning. It's a bolt.
That's what I pictured.
It happened fast and it happened quick.
That's what I pictured, lightning bolts.
Now, I wonder what it looked like. I wonder what God would have looked like in his anger against Satan.
Probably not. We can't comprehend.
I certainly don't know. I mean, we can go to Revelations. So you can get a picture of what God's eyes. It goes back to John's thing of, well, God doesn't have a body. He's a spirit. You know,
I would think
get this
he
picture
would stand
of God's eyes.
With his hands held.
Whatever picture comes to mind of this tremendous amount of righteous anger. Against Satan. What you put that in your own mind, what it looks like. Come up with your own picture. But because God is perfect, and everything that remains in heaven must be perfect. God is far greater than Lucifer and his angels. And he decided to prepare something. So he prepares a lake of fire for Lucifer and his angels.
Was that hell?
Huh?
Was that hell?
Well, this is called the Lake of Fire. There's different takes on hell and the Lake of Fire. Some translations will use the word everlasting fire. Others will say everlasting damnation, eternal hell. Basically, in other words, it's for eternity.
My question is, when God made the angels and what did he know that these ones were going to change? Satan.
Who, God?
Yeah. And if he did, then that shows you like he planned for evil to come about and everything. And it was all like,
yeah, and that's like, yeah, that's the question. How can God be holy?
Yeah, it's like why did he create that? punishment for the bad angels? Is it like, you know, that's the
mm-hmm.
that's what makes me like think when I'm like, why create the bad angels? Why create Satan? You know, all that.
If he created us, with free will from the beginning, without having angels and creating Satan, then there would be no reason for Jesus to come.
Maybe the point was to create an evil source, so we had that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wanted us to choose.
I'll give you a verse afterwards that might answer that. When you think of this, thought that God goes in there. So in other words, you got Satan. He rebels. God kicks him out. But then God tells him, "You're going to go. Instead, you're going to be brought down, basically to the lowest part, or you're going to be brought down to the dead, to its very lowest depths." God then created a place. Now, whether God created this place when he created the world, I don't think he did, because it was perfection.
Right.
Or they created it after the fall, after Satan sinned. In any case, God creates this place. It is a place of punishment. It is a place for Satan and his angels. We got to remember that. God decided, and God will decide when it is right and the right time for Satan and his angels to face God and be put into this lake of fire. Matthew 25:41 says it speaks of an everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Revelation 20:10 says this: Lucifer and his angels have not been yet, they're not confined to this place. But why do we know they're not confined to this place?
Because they're out there in the world trying to create evil.
Right.
Trying to lead us astray.
Sure, we see it day in and day out, right? Mm-hmm. Even in our own lives, we can see where Satan tries to trip us up or make us fall. Again, it could be Satan, it could be one of his other angel counterparts that are helping him. But either case, they are, whoever it is, trying to trip us up in our everyday walk, our everyday part of life. They do this. And so we have this picture here of that. And like I said, in Revelation 12:10, it says this, that the devil will be cast into the lake of fire and will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Now, ever seen anything tormented? I mean, as a kid growing up, the cats probably thought, that was torment, pulling their tail or dragging them around on the, you know, grass. That's not even torment. That's not even close to what Satan is going to go through. I can't even imagine what kind of torment that God is going to put Satan through. Satan obviously knows what it's like. He knows what hell is going to be like for him, or the lake of fire, because he's forever trying to take as many people with him.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
If someone dies out of the grace of God, mm-hmm. and they go to hell,
okay,
God is an all-forgiving
mm-hmm.
and compassionate being. Do they ever get out of hell?
Once they've gone there? It's a very good question. I don't believe so.
I don't intend on going to hell. I was just, you know.
I don't believe so. As we will see later on, where the story of the rich man and Lazarus, and the rich man dies. Lazarus was a beggar, sat outside the rich man's door, and he goes to. Both of them die. Lazarus dies, rich man dies. The rich man goes to hell, and he's in Sheol, as they call it, or hell, and he's there. And Lazarus is over, and he's quote unquote in Abraham's bosom. In other words, which gives you a picture that he's maybe got Abraham's walking with him, or he's got his. And the rich man sees a cross, and he sees Abraham, which I still don't understand to this day. How can he recognize who Abraham was, who died several hundred years prior to that, or 1,000 years prior to that? But he recognizes him. He says, "Abraham, Abraham answers him. And he says, send Lazarus over here to dip his finger in a drop of water. Give me a drop, put it on my tongue, because it's hot. It's hot here. So you get this picture that it's extremely hot. Your body's not burning up, you know, or your spirit body, whatever you what it looks like after you die. It's not burning up. It's still there. He says it's hot. Abraham says, I can't. There's a gulf between you and me. You can't pass to us, and I can't pass to you. So it gives you a picture that wherever he's at, he can look across this gulf and see what he's missing out on, and vice versa. Whether or not that's the case, and that's where some theologians, and I'm not a theologian, but some theologians will say that place is hell. The lake of fire is after the final judgment when God has executed judgment on Satan and his angels, and then that's where those who are in hell move to the lake of fire. I'm not even going to begin to say one way or the other because I'm not a scholar when it comes to these things, when it comes to that. And I don't think anybody ever knows unless you've been there.
Right.
And I don't know anybody who's been there has come back.
Right.
So there's this. Right. I don't think anybody wants to go there to find out and then try to come back. But we get this picture. Then he tells Lazarus, then tells Abraham, he says, well, okay, at least send Lazarus back to my brothers who are still alive to let them know about this place. And Lazarus and Moses said, what good is a dead man coming back if they don't believe Moses and the prophets? In other words, he's saying, I'm not sending them back to them because they've got Moses and the prophets. And if they don't believe Moses and the prophets, why are they going to believe Lazarus who comes back from the dead?
Right.
And so you get this picture. Again, then the story ends there. Don't know what takes place, what happens, but that story ends. And so we think we see all these this dynamics of hell. It's obviously a place nobody wants to go to.
Right.
And yet God has given us this book to help us understand how we keep ourselves from going to that place. That's the fun part about this book. So personally, based off of that, the story and other verses in the Bible, when a person dies and has no relationship with God and has not been spared, even though God is a merciful and a just and compassionate God, we know that. He's full of love. He is love. God is also holy and just. And so when somebody dies, we don't know, all we can say is we trust in God's compassion and his justice. And God is the author. He makes the decision. It's not ours to make. And that's all you can rest in. And that is, you know, many times, there's been many, I've done 4 funerals now, and 2 out of those funerals, those people made a profession of faith. I still don't know. I'm not the author of that. I can sit here and tell you everything that I'm saying. Yeah, I believe. I can die and go to hell. I could die and go to heaven.
God knows
the heart. And so, and he's the one who... He recognizes that. It's not for us to choose. And that comes back to this huge thing of faith and saying, okay, God, I trust. I trust in you. I believe everything you've said. I may not be perfect. I may not live everything perfect, but I'm going to do my best. And I'm going to just trust in your hands, in your grace. And that's where you have to leave it at. And that's really difficult because we really want to know. I want to know. Okay, and you can know. Your heart will. The Bible says your spirit bears witness with his spirit that you are his son and daughter. And so we get to this thing. But we also have to remember that God never, ever created hell or the lake of fire for man. He did not create that for us. Okay, it was created for Satan and his angels. He never once said, I created hell for mankind. Okay, he created it for Satan and his angels. Now, when you get to the fall and we begin to talk about that, we'll get into a little bit more detail of why man ends up there. Okay, but in this context here, in this lesson, we're not talking about mankind going there. This is strictly for Satan and his angels, and that's what we have to remember. okay. And recognize. So just remember that. Okay. So, God, your promise said you created that for Satan and his angels, and I trust all these other things you're telling me about, and I put my faith in them. And that's where it begins a little bit more of excitement, I guess. God will not tolerate disobedience, though. Through this thing, we can see that God will not tolerate that, and he will always punish those who discipline or fight against him. He will always go after that. Matter of fact, in the New Testament, there's a passage of Scripture in Corinthians where it talks about the church. Anyone who... it's a very hard word to translate from the Greek because it's just a tremendous terror. It says anyone who harms the church, in other words, God's church, who goes after God's church, God will harm him. In other words, he's saying, if you try to disrupt my church, I will come after you. So he gives this picture that even those who go after the church, so anything that's going on persecution around the world is persecuting the church, God will go after those individuals. And it is not something that in scholars, and again, I'm not a scholar, but the way they describe it is we don't know what that terror is. It's just very, very bad. Okay? The way that Greeks wrote it out, they don't actually describe it. They just, it's a very bad thing. So don't harm God's church,
right.
In essence. And so, but if you go to Proverbs, it says, whoever calls division among the brethren, which you can interpret that whichever way, your family, brothers and sisters causing division, or you can interpret as brothers and sisters in Christ. If you cause division in the church, God may come after harm you. Okay, so there's some of that there with that. So in other words, God's church is supposed to be about love. And when you don't love one another, you go down this whole other road. So, makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a long way to answer your question, but and I don't know if we got to the answer of your question.
Well,
but
it makes a little more sense.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, so then next thing is, then Lucifer and his angels begin to hate God and man. The next thing is that he does there. So he goes after us. And then, so ever since then, God casts him to the earth. He's down on the earth now. He's roaming throughout the earth. In Job 1 and 2, we know that the book of Job is attributed to the oldest book in the Bible. It's not in the beginning of the Bible. You think, well, it would be at the beginning of the Bible, but it's not. Job is attributed to being the oldest. Job is thought to have lived around the time shortly after Adam and Eve on the earth. He's attributed to being there early on. And part of that is, again, the scholars reading the writings and saying, okay, the book of Job in here, give you this picture. Job was a man. He's a very wealthy man. If you go to Job 1. And it says that his sons were out preparing a feast, and they would invite them. And when the celebrations ended, sometimes it said Job would purify his children. He would get up early in the morning and offer burnt offerings for each of them. And Job said for himself, perhaps my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. So he was concerned about his children's heart. And he says, and then this was his first practice. In other words, he would do this on a regular basis, day in and day out. And then we get this picture. One of the day, the members of the heavenly court came to present themselves before the Lord. The accuser, Satan, came with them. And God says this, and he says, and the Lord says this, where have you come from? He says to Lucifer. So you get this picture that Satan is not just confined to the earth, but he's able to go into the presence of God in heaven. Even whether that's now, current, or that was just early on. I don't know. But you get this picture that Satan is able to go into the presence of God. So here he is, and he says, Satan answered the Lord, and he says, I've been patrolling or going back and forth, to and fro throughout the whole earth, and watching everything that's going on. And then the Lord asked Satan, have you noticed my servant Job? He is the finest of all the earth. He's blameless, a man of righteousness and integrity. He fears God and stays away from evil. You get this picture that Satan is now on the earth. He's roaming to and fro. He's going back and forth throughout the whole earth. And there's other verses that say he goes back and forth seeking whom he may devour. as a roaring lion. That's you can find that in him and his demons. They go back and forth, walking back and forth on it. And then he says, as a devil, the devil walks about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. I use the word Satan a lot of times instead of the devil, but same thing. And you have this picture of Satan being able to go back and forth. By the way, in Job, it happened twice. It didn't happen just once. Later on, he went back into the heavens courts, and he went back in front of God's presence, and he said, "Let me do this to Job, and if you let me do this, he'll curse you." In other words, and God says, "Sure, go right ahead." So it gives you also the impression that God will allow Satan to do things to his servants or those of us who follow and believe him. Which means that if he will allow you to do that, if God will allow Satan to do that, that means sometimes it might be affliction that we go through is caused by Satan. And God's allowing it because he knows that we will trust him. Okay? So it's not always this thing, well, okay. So sometimes those kind of things can go on.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because oftentimes we're like, why in the world did this happen to me?
Test of our faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to break because of something small? Because in God's eyes, not anything we go through is minuscule. So if we trust in him, then we'll know that he'll handle it. But if we get lost in trusting, get lost and start thinking about Satan and all that, we'll be overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, I struggle with that thought all the time, especially when I get, I've never really had any major sicknesses, but I struggled that when Julie had her gallbladder surgery.
Right, right.
I sat there and I wrestled with it. I'm like, man.
And when you see the first initial thought, be killed or something like that. See, now that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, it can be, but still doesn't negate the fact that, let's say something happened to Shane. God forbid that happens. But let's say something happens to him. God, why would you allow an innocent baby like him to go through that? Well, wait a minute. Did God allow that? Yeah, of course he did. God allows anything to happen. He could stop anything. He could stop a murderer who has got a gun at a guy's head right now, somewhere in the world. If he wanted to stop the bullet, he could stop the bullet. God chooses to allow man to do things that go against his very core. God is love, so he certainly wouldn't want any, he loves every single one of us, he certainly wouldn't want any one of us to suffer. He doesn't. He never intended that. And our fallen world that we live in, it is a part of nature. So sickness that comes along, sure, it could be maybe because we don't eat healthy. It could be because we are allergic to something. But our bodies are constantly dying. They were born. At the moment you're born, your body starts to die, right? Yeah. It's just a steady process. And you can look around you at the world around you. Everything starts. It's just a natural process from the creation when Adam and Eve fell. But those are things that we go through. Does it change your view to know that God will allow things, or maybe allow Satan to do things to you or your family because he wants to when I first thought about that, it kind of makes me like, well, wait a minute, God, I am doing everything I can to follow you. Why would you allow Satan, like in Job's situation, why would you allow Satan to take his, well, you ended up letting him take his family, all his kids. His wife was the only one in himself who didn't die. All his kids died. He lost all of his animals, his wealth, his property, and his house. And yet he still wouldn't curse God. He wouldn't curse him. And his friends were like, man, just give it up. Get rid of it. He didn't do it. And he remained faithful until the end. And in the end, God blessed him again. He had more children.
It's God's love in its own way. You just know that you don't see it as God's love at that moment.
Right.
In a way.
And I never saw that either.
Yeah.
The other thing that stood out to me about Job's story here with Satan going back and forth, and this is kind of off the subject of the lesson, but when Satan came into his presence, what did God do about Job? He bragged on him. So when Satan goes to, if Satan were to go to God on one of us, God forbid that would happen. But let's say they did. Let's say Satan goes into God's presence and says, I want Doug. I want him. God says, go ahead, do whatever you want to Doug. I know Doug. I know his heart. He basically was bragging about Doug.
Right.
He's bragging about Job. Sure, go right ahead. I know his heart. His heart is on me. That's a lot of faith and trust in God in us. Something that you just don't hear of. Why would God trust man? Why would he trust me? You know, I get teary-eyed just thinking about that God would brag on me. Pretty cool. Pretty cool thing. Well, that brings us to the end. We have this thing. We've got three characters. So whenever you're reading the Bible, all these characters, now these three characters come out. It's the Bible, you have God, you have Satan, and then you have man. And so now from here on out, we will see these three at war, at constant battle, all throughout. Everything that we're going to go through for the next, we're on lesson 8, almost to lesson 31 or 32, for the next 20-some lessons. We are going to see nothing but a war going on between God, Satan, and man. And it's just a constant battle over and over again. And we see this time in, day out. Year after year, you'll see this battle. And it brings us to this spot on the timeline. We are right there still. Next week, we'll move over a little bit further. When it comes to, we'll go past Adam and Eve. Next week's lesson is the lesson where Adam and Eve disobey God. And if you notice, our branch is really starting to get faded. I bet you, though, if you go over and break one of the thicker end of the branch or took a penknife, it would still be green in there. But those leaves are about had it. But they're still hanging on. They're still hanging on. So hopefully nobody else takes it off of there, but... Yeah, any last thoughts or comments?